Welcome to the Littler International Employment Law Podcast Series. Conversations for the multinational employer on issues impacting their global business.
Hello, welcome to our series, Doing Business in the Americas. My name is Juan Carlos Varela, and I am a member of Littler Mendelson International Office. Today, we are going to talk about employment contracts in general, and incidentally, we're going to cover non-competes, unfair competition, and trade secrets issues in the Americas. For today's podcast, we have Courtney Wilson, shareholder at Littler Mendelson PC. Courtney has litigated and drafted employment contracts, including non-competes, for almost 4 years. He has tried employment cases before judges, juries, arbitrators throughout Florida, including multiple appeals in the United States Supreme Court. So, Courtney, welcome to our podcast series, and thank you very much for accepting our invitation today.
Thank you, Juan Carlos. I'm very glad to be here this afternoon to talk about employment contracts in general, and particularly non-compete agreements.
So tell us a little bit about your practice, Courtney. Tell us a little bit about what you do at Littler.
Well, Juan Carlos, my practice is obviously in labor and employment law, but it focuses more specifically on prosecuting and defending non-compete, unfair competition, and trade secret claims. And included in that is litigating complex employment contracts. Sometimes those non-competes are included in the contract, and sometimes they're separate. And I've done both and drafted both.
And then what is the importance of employment contracts? Because coming from a civil law jurisdiction, in my case, employment contracts are very, very important. But in the U.S., sometimes when you get advice from lawyers, they say, don't do an employment contract, don't draft one, or don't put it in writing. And that's kind of confusing. So can you tell us what the importance of employment contracts under the U.S. law is?
Yes. And the employment contract is really the basis of all employment. Now, that doesn't mean it has to be an express written contract. And that's what a lot of people will be talking about. But the relationship is really contractual. So understanding the benefits and the risks of various forms of contracts and contract provisions is absolutely crucial to optimizing the relationship with your employee. Now, this is particularly crucial with confidentiality, non-compete, and non-solicitation agreements that are designed to protect your valuable assets, such as your confidential information, your relationships with your customers and your clients, and your reputation and goodwill in the marketplace.
So could you say then that most employees have contracts? All employees have contracts?
Yeah, as I alluded to, there are probably three levels, one being the written contract that people are more familiar with and is more formal. That in the States is kind of the exception, but those are not uncommon. With a non-compete, it obviously has to be in writing. But there's also a contractual relationship, either verbally or implied, anytime you have an employee-employer relationship. That is to say, when you have an employee, you promise to pay them if they do the work. And so that is considered a contract under American law, particularly in Florida. And so if you don't pay them or they don't do the work they've agreed to do, that involves a contractual undertaking, even if you don't have a written contract with that employee.
So I understand. So will employees do not have contracts? Is that correct?
That's not correct. That's a common misconception. At will in Florida is considered what we call a strong at will state, but that's very common in the United States. That at will employee means either the employer or the employee can terminate the relationship at will. It doesn't mean there isn't an underlying basic contract. And again, that contract may be as simple as I hire you to, perform a job. If you perform that job 40 hours, then I'm going to pay you for 40 hours. That's a contractual relationship. Now, at will means once I've paid you, I can say, don't come back. And likewise, the employee can say, I've done the job for a while. I'm quitting. I'm not coming back. That's terminable at will, but there is still an underlying relationship and an obligation both ways to do the job and to pay for the work that's performed, so long as the relationship and the contract exist.
I see, and that's one of the unique provisions in American labor and employment law that is completely different from the rest of Americas, where employment at will is non-existent or very rare. So this is something that the usual investors in the Americas, they always confused the ability to terminate or not, and they enter into employment agreements and then jeopardize the at-will doctrine. Is that fair to say?
That's correct. And I've encountered that a lot too, that in other countries, it's much less common to have at-will employment. So there is kind of the preconception that you need a contract for a specific term, a one-year contract, a two-year contract, or even a perpetual contract. That is not the default position in Florida or in the states generally. Instead, the presumption really is that either side can walk away whenever they want. And only if you make a conscious decision to change that situation do you typically need a contract for a specific term. You may need a contract for another reason, but in terms of whether it's 1 year, 2 years, or perpetually, that is the exception, not the rule.
I see. And what about the policies and handbooks? Are those contracts?
Typically not. The way certainly that we draft policies and handbooks, we make it very clear within those documents that they are entirely discretionary, that the employer can modify them at any time as it sees fit, and that they are not contractual promises or obligations. In other words, the employee can't sue you to say you didn't follow something that's in the employee policy or handbook because it's not that kind of a commitment. That is usually effective, but it's still important to make sure that if somebody is assessing your contracts with employees generally or with a specific employee, that they review any policies or handbooks you have already to make sure that those don't interfere with your contractual relationship. So your lawyer should look at everything.
Yeah. And what else is a contract? What else can comprise a contract with an employee?
Well, everything really that you have in place with your employee needs to be considered. It may not ultimately, you know, be material or become part of the contract, but it needs to be considered by your attorney in assessing the relationship. You may have more than one agreement with the same employee. You may have employee policies and handbooks that don't say they're discretionary and don't say that they're non-contractual. And so you at least have to evaluate those. You don't want to view a contract in isolation and say, well, we've got a contract just about this over here. That's all we need to look at. That's all we need to change. If you get into a dispute with your employee, their lawyer and the judge looking at the case are going to look at every agreement you have with that employee and determine what the big picture is. So you need to do the same thing to assess your relationship in the first place.
So just to make sure I understand, so you can have an employee can have more than one contract, and the contract that can overlap one subject to the other, right?
Correct. And that's when you can also create issues. For example, it is not unusual for us to do a separation or severance agreement with an employee that's leaving, and you may want to give them some severance pay, and obtain a release of claims from them to make sure that the relationship is over and done with when they walk out the door. That severance agreement, you know, needs to be looked at in light of what other agreements you have had with that employee, such as a non-compete agreement. A non-compete agreement primarily acts after the employee leaves your employment. So you can't look at just the severance agreement and say this may be a great severance agreement, but does it impact anything else, such as my non-compete or my confidentiality agreement? To give you an example, if your severance agreement has a confidentiality provision, your non-compete agreement likely also has a confidentiality provision. You need to be sure those are consistent and that one doesn't displace the other or create some sort of conflict between the two. That's a regular occurrence and it causes problems. So again, your attorney has to have the big picture, not just try to do one agreement in isolation without asking and looking at any other agreements you may have with the employee.
And when we were preparing for this podcast, we were discussing issues and so on. You mentioned that one common defense to the enforcement of a non-compete agreement was the employee claiming that the employer has breached some prior obligations. So can you elaborate more on that?
Sure. And that really dovetailed into the prior topic. You know, you commonly have some sort of contractual relationship with the employee, whether it's written or not, that you're going to pay them. Some of these are more complicated than others, obviously. You may, you know, pay commissions, you may pay bonuses, there may be profit sharing, you know, stock options. These are all not uncommon benefits, especially for high-level employees. So you have that sort of an agreement. Then you have a non-compete agreement, which may be entirely a separate document, okay? The employee leaves for whatever reason, goes to a competitor, and you try to enforce your non-compete agreement to prevent them from unfairly competing with you. Probably nearly the most common defense to that is the employee saying, yes, you said I breached the non-compete agreement, but you already breached this other agreement with me because you didn't calculate my commission correctly. You didn't pay me a bonus I should have gotten. You know, my stock options, you know, weren't delivered as they were promised, or I lost them right then and there. And so the employer violated that agreement first, and therefore I, the employee, don't have to honor the non-compete agreement post-employment. That, like I said, is a very common defense. And even if it's not successful, can really complicate trying to enforce your non-compete agreement after the employee leaves. Now, there's a solution to that in Florida, and that is to keep them entirely separate and to include language in your non-compete that says it is an independent covenant. That is, it is not dependent on any other obligation to the employee. If you include that provision and it's written correctly, then the employee can't raise those other issues about compensation or whatever it may be as a defense to your non-compete. They have to address the non-compete directly and head on, and that gives you, the employer, a much cleaner, stronger, and more direct strategy for enforcing the non-compete.
That's very interesting. In fact, I think that gave me an idea to a new podcast, so I'm going to invite you again to another session to talk about all the non-competes and how to do it in Florida properly. But let's move on to another topic, because we were talking about, in our prior session, how is the transfer of employees among different companies regulated in the Americas, in Florida specifically? So basically, an employer that has a group of companies in different parts of the U.S. or maybe the world, can he transfer or the employer transfer employees among different companies? And how is that regulated in the Americas?
It is not per se regulated in the sense of, you know, government regulation as we typically think of it here. And I should say it's a common occurrence that employees are effectively, I'll say, transferred from one related company to another. However, and this is where the contractual relationship is important, that is not what technically occurs legally. In Florida and the states generally, you know, corporate employers are viewed as independent of each other legally. And so an employee is employed typically by only one of those entities. If they want to transfer, they terminate their employment with company A and then begin new employment with company B. So they've got an entirely new relationship. It's not really a transfer in the legal sense. And the importance of that is that some things in the agreement and some other rights may be triggered because of a termination of employment. Even if the employee agrees and the employer agrees, and, you know, the first employer and the second employer agree, the employee's employment with company A has technically ended and terminated. So if that triggers a right to, for example, unused vacation pay, severance pay, forfeiture of some compensation or benefits that would be due absent a termination, that employee has technically been terminated and is beginning a new period of employment with company B, even though the two are affiliated. Now, you can write contracts around that to provide that all that carries over and both the employer and the employee agree to that. but it does not happen automatically. The other area where that can really trip up the employer is if you have a non-compete agreement with Company A. Company A may be the only company that can enforce that. And if the employee terminates with Company A and then transfers to Company B, Company B may not be protected by that prior non-compete. So you need to close look at the non-compete to make sure it protects Company B, or you may need a new one before that transfer occurs.
That's very, very interesting and different from the rest of the Americas, because the reality in the Americas is that the presumption is that contracts, employment contracts within the same group, it basically continues regardless if it's terminated in one country and on another. In fact, some countries provide in their laws that the contract of an employee in one country that to provide services to in another country with this same group is actually the same contract. So if that applies to the U.S., if something is transferred from Argentina to the U.S. and then from the U.S. to Brazil, then you have the U.S. situation that you just described, but under the laws of Argentina or Brazil, that maybe it's just on one contract. So people should be aware of that. And what was related to your example of Company A, Company B? What about mergers and acquisitions? What is the effect of that employment contract altering the states in case of mergers or when a company goes out of business?
Yeah, and it flows from the same idea that each of these companies are independent and the agreement is just with the company. So in the case of mergers, acquisitions, obviously there are a multitude of different potential transactions and the result will depend on the nature of the transaction. To give you an example, many transactions are just stock sales where the ownership of a company changes. In that case, it's legally the same company. It's still a party to the contract with the employee that pre-existed the stock sale. And really, it typically has no consequences to that employer-employee relationship. But other things like a merger, maybe the pre-existing company either changes its structure or goes out of business completely and a new company comes out of the merger, which is more typical, then that new company, again, the employee's employment with the predecessor is terminated and they begin new employment with the new company with all of the potential consequences that has. There are solutions to that, but that's what can happen.
What would be one of your solutions?
I mean, the real solution is to make sure your lawyer looks at it before the merger, the reorganization, or the transaction. But the backstop to that is to make sure your contracts are assignable or enforceable by a successor in interest. For example, a non-compete agreement, you can provide specifically, and you need to provide specifically, that this is enforceable by Company A, who's your current employer, but Company A can also assign it to another company, or it can be enforced by a successor of Company A. So if those provisions are in there, and then Company A merges or is reorganized or changes its structure from a corporation to a limited liability company, it can just assign that employee agreement to the new company, or the new company can take over the matter of law just because it is the successor in interest and that agreement provides that it can be enforced by a successor. The other thing that can be provided for in an agreement and should be considered is whether it can be enforced by what we call a third-party beneficiary. This kind of does what you talked about perhaps in other countries where you provide specifically in the contract that it protects not only Company A, who is the current employer, but all of the affiliates, parents, and subsidiary companies of Company A are also protected by the contract. And this is much more typical with a non-compete confidentiality agreement. But that can also be enforceable in a way to kind of protect against a reorganization or a merger or something, undermining your right to enforce this contract.
And Courtney, because we are at the end of our podcast, almost all of us are at the end of our podcast, you've been you serve in several leadership roles at the Florida War in the Labor and Employment Law session. You were the chair in 2002, 2003. You were named the best lawyers in America from 2000 to 2023. One final thought for the audience on this topic from you.
The most important thing is that you get ahead in the game and look at your contractual rights and obligations with your employees before taking any action, before terminating an employee, before changing their employment, and before doing a reorganization. It is much easier to address and correct those things in advance than where I usually end up, which is litigating them after the fact.
All right. Well, thank you, my friend. Thank you, Courtney, again, for joining us today. And thank you, the audience, for tuning in. More to come.
Thank you very much, Juan Carlos.
The purpose of this program is to provide helpful information for employers addressing the latest developments in labor and employment relations. It is not a substitute for experienced legal counsel and does not provide legal advice or attempt to address the numerous factual issues that arise in any employment-related issue. To discover other labor and employment podcast series from Littler, the largest global employment and labor law practice, visit littler.com/podcasts.